In a world crying out for a top 10 show. John Rocha and Matt Nost are here to bring you the top 10. Take it away, boys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another brand new live episode for those of you who are $10 and above show of the top 10. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. This is John Rocha. That's Matt Nost.
Yes.
And we've got so much to cover today in terms of the countdown. Going to have some fun here counting down the top 10 our favorite remix. That's our favorite remix. Make sure that's clear. The favorite is the word.
Yes.
That we said, our top 10 favorite remix of films. So we're excited to get into it. But yeah, we're here doing the show live for our $10 and above patrons. So if you're in watching right now, send in a chat, send in some comments. Let us know what you think about this. Send in along your favorite remix as well as we go along. So Matt, how are you? How are things? Is Dropping Dimes ramping up? We're on the precipice of the start of the NBA season.
Thoughts
on Kyrie Irving? What's going on in your mind, my man?
I should have already started it, but I've been so busy with other side projects.
Yeah.
That, yes, season starts next week. So
yeah, crazy.
I know. I can't believe it was that quick a turnaround.
Right?
I don't know. The Kyrie situation is a whole can of worms. Maybe we should do a special, a top 10 edition of Kyrie Irving.
I like that idea.
Well, after last night's, the Nets won't extend him now. It just keeps getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's 20 minutes right there if you want to talk about that. How about, did you see Jamie Costa's Robin Williams?
I did. Yeah.
So good.
Right? It's incredible. And I thought the actress who played Pam Dauber was damn good as well. Her playing Pam Dauber was really good. So it was good back and forth. And, that's something that I was alive for, to get the news as a young kid, because I just started to know who the hell John Belushi was. And
sure.
I remember reading about it, and because De Niro was there that night as well, the night before, rather. And so kind of interesting to hear how that affected both men. But I thought Jamie Costa did an incredible job with it. And then a good button at the end coming, not making us feel down the whole time, but finding a way to kind of have a little more of a smile by the end of it, and then rolling on from that. But it was fantastic. Yeah.
I just saw the initial comments of like, this needs to be made into a movie and whatnot. And I was like, really? Yeah. Well, I've seen him do the impression, and it is nothing short of amazing.
Yes, agreed.
Like, everybody else seems to be doing a caricature, and his seems more honest and real.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay. I mean, I wouldn't come in prejudging that it was just like, it should be made into a movie, and then you see it, and you're like, yeah. If you can get that kind of quality throughout, that thing's going to win an Oscar.
Yeah.
I mean, so hopefully that does happen. I hope he gets the green light on this, and they get a great script. And because I was nothing short of blown away. Everybody was like, this should be a movie. I agreed. I was like, I would love to watch more of this.
Yeah, he's done this, because he had that Kenobi one a year or two ago.
Yeah.
It had like a crap ton of followers, views rather, like in the 20 million range, I think. So Jamie's certainly incredible at what he does. And, where people are pumping out multiple YouTube videos, hoping one of them catches on, he's doing one every few months, and it's like exploding like crazy. And he's getting funding for these movies and hiring some good people, clearly, from the editing, the cinematography, the lighting, the script, the costumes, everything. They really nailed it this time around. And it was smart to keep it simple. Put it in a dressing room so you're not having multiple locations.
Yeah.
And you can make the drama work in the dressing room.
By saying on the Paramount lot, and he's just in a trailer, you bought it. You're like, I'm into this world. This seems reasonable.
Right.
And that's the biggest key was, I think, the sets and the clothing and all that, because it just felt authentic.
Yeah.
And you can tell they've actually put a lot of time and effort and work into it.
Yeah.
And then to see the results, Because after I watched, I was scrolling through the comments, be like, what else did I agree with people on? And I think the one I was happiest to see was when other people noticed how on cue he was with different mannerisms, at least we assume, turning back, quiet, reflective, and then amping back up and all the little tiny things in between. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. It's like, good for you. Good for you. I really hope this takes off.
Yeah. People forget how the relationship between Robin Williams and Pam Dauber, that was an essential relationship at a young time in his career. Like, they legitimately had a very tremendous amount of affection for each other doing the Mork and Mindy, because both of them were at the beginning, right? I mean, who knew what Robin Williams was going to become? A lot of people felt Pam Dauber was going to break out from this after it was done and do a lot more lead. She was going to be kind of the Erin Gray of 80s television. But Erin Gray became the Erin Gray of 80s television, and Pam would slide into TV movies every once in a while, but never quite achieved the level of fame that Robin did. And who knows if her desire was to achieve that, but this was an important relationship. So for them to capture it the way they did, I thought was really well done. Do I think it should have, they should turn this into a huge movie where he plays Robin Williams? I don't know if I want to go there necessarily, because although he does a great imitation.
Sounds like you're a hater.
No.
Sounds like you're a hater.
I love Jamie, but does he 100% look like Robin Williams?
No one is ever going to 100% look like.
Right. I was just going to say, like, Anthony Hopkins didn't look like fucking Nixon, and he did a great job. So should they do a movie? I think I'm a little bit more reserved than most people who are falling all over themselves to say this should be a movie. I'm more of like, okay, let's see a little bit more. Let's see what more you can do. Let's see you on the set. Let's see you doing some scenes from some of his movies. And where is this movie going to go to? Does it end with the John Belushi revelation, or does it end with him later on about, you know, going into superstardom? I don't know. Like, do you end with Good Morning Vietnam? I don't know. So
there's a lot of endpoints that you could choose. The career is too long and too big to do in one movie. So I think just picking a sliver of time makes more sense. For someone like him.
But all credit to Jamie. Incredible.
I just think if you saw that in an audition and he pulled off all that in an audition, you'd be blown away and be like, I want to see everything about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Sure.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in. Let's do it. I don't know if you need crowdfunding for this, but, you know, I got five on it. I would happily do that.
I'm on it. I like that. Jeremy Bowers is in here. He says his first time watching live in a long time. Very excited and looking forward to the distraction. Oh, well, glad we can distract you, Jeremy. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
We're going to get into things here today. Anything else going on in your world? Anything else you want to bring up and talk about? Any of those trailers, the Beatles trailer, the Scream trailer, anything standing out to you? The Adam Warlock?
It's rare when I go and watch a trailer. I did see. So is the James Gunn announcement legit?
Yes. Adam Warlock. Okay. Yes. Yes. Are you excited about that?
Yeah, I think so, because it's in his hands. I haven't rushed out. I still haven't seen Shang-Chi.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
I'm just kind of superheroed out, you know, for a while.
Understood, man.
Like, I wasn't enthralled with Suicide Squad. I thought it was good.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But anyway, that's interesting. Look, I think Will's a good actor.
Yes. Damn good
and
actor.
He's got a broad range, so he should be able to, if there's any kind of comedic elements, be able to pull that off, plus all the serious stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I think that could be really interesting. I just briefly scanned that on Twitter, 20 minutes ago or something. That cast is getting, well, between that and Thor, Thor's cast is crazy long.
And no surprise that they're both connected in a way, Thor and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Because I don't know if Thor is going to show up in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, but we do know the Guardians are going to be in the next Thor movie. But I can't imagine he wouldn't, right? Wouldn't you think that he'd show up in some shape or form in that movie?
I guess it just depends on where that movie ends in the multiverse type of thing and how they move forward. That'll dictate whether or not that he makes, because he could be off Thor Dark World and doing a side mission while they do their next one.
Right.
Type of thing, instead of teaming up at all times. I don't know. Who knows? I'm intrigued on the possibility. I think that's a perfect marriage between some of the characters that are left.
Yeah.
I'm easily looking forward to that the most. At least I think as of right now.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice too. It's not a name that I would normally think of for Adam Warlock. You know, the vision of Adam Warlock is this, you know, he's supposedly the perfect human. That's what he was created as in the Marvel comics. And he's this big, you know, he's this big blonde haired, super muscly dude. But maybe this is like, you know, kind of a play on that. Now, not that Will Poulter isn't an attractive dude or a strong looking dude. I don't know that he's necessarily the classical handsome guy. Right. So I wonder if that's going to be a play on it, if it's something being used to kind of, because he's great with humor. If you watch him in We're the Millers, he's very funny in that movie. So he's played the darker stuff for like in Detroit, but he's also played the lighter stuff for sure. So will he be kind of like, will that be a play on things that they kind of give him shit for, quote, being the perfect human,
man.
You know, that'd be kind of funny for sure.
Well, especially if Thor has the potential of being right there, or if Chris Pratt is in full on shape.
Yeah, if you have Thor, Will Poulter, I mean, Adam Warlock and Star-Lord all like kind of vying for Gamora. Because remember, Gamora, it doesn't remember the relationship. It could
work. Exactly. Her mind has been erased on some level, even though it's a different woman that hasn't experienced all the other things with Chris Pratt's character.
Right. So
that's kind of fun. They have to fall back in love. Hmm. Kind of resetting the clock on that. I like it. That's what I'm most into. That and Doctor Strange. I think those are my three that I think have the most potential for fun in the multiverse. Oh, yeah. But I could easily be proven wrong because Marvel's got a pretty tremendous track record. I'm just kind of, once again, I'm a little superheroed out for the time being.
Listen to you.
I didn't finish What If.
Wow. What is wrong with you?
I got through 1.5 and I was like, okay. I'm superheroed out for right now, man. It's been a lot of superheroes for a long time. And now with Disney going, that's what you like? All right. And I just hope they don't Star Wars this.
You think you've seen superheroes? Just wait.
Oh, dude, we got superheroes for days.
just you wait.
Yeah, and now that they've invested into superheroes in the parks, they're going to keep that.
Oh, my God, that's been
a massive investment. So this Marvel wave is going to be a tsunami.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's going to be huge, man.
I know. So that's a lot of superhero stuff.
Yeah, dude.
On top of everything else that's coming. I mean, I know I'm going to watch the bulk of it. I at this point, pick my spots because it just doesn't end.
Yeah, no, it doesn't end.
Whereas over the past two nights, I watched Topsy Turvy again. I'd rather do that. I watched
the Mike Lee film.
Oh, okay.
Respect.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah, it's one of the best.
It is. I agree with you. It's so good.
Yeah.
My favorite scene, I think it's got to be when Timothy Spall and the other actor that was in Rome.
Yeah, Kevin McKidd. Yes,
Kevin McKidd. Right? So they share a dressing room together.
Mm-hmm.
And Timothy Spall's Mikado song just gets cut.
Oh, yes.
And yeah. He's Sullivan comes in and the two owners or directors or whatever of the Savoy, and they're all telling him it was a great song. This has nothing to do with the unit. He's all sullen.
Yeah.
And then they turn, to the guy, the other actor in his room. I've already forgotten his name. What was his name again?
Kevin McKidd. Yeah.
Kevin McKidd. Thank you. So they turn to Kevin and they're like, but you were, Kevin, excellent job tonight. And he stands up. He goes from full on consoling to the pure actor of, please. You really think so? It's just. And then the door shuts and he turns around and goes back to consoling his friend. But he picks up that compliment. I fucking love that scene. Timothy Spall is just at his bottom and he's trying to help him out. And you really think so?
You got something positive to say about me? Thank you.
I love that movie for all those tiny little moments.
I agree, brother. I mean, it's a 3-hour film, but if it gets its hooks in you, it's actually a film that is shorter than you think it is. You know, so
I like that it's not fully in sequence. They jumble around the timelines on it and then kind of fill you in. They show you some of the rehearsals, the intimate rehearsals behind the scenes. And that's kind of fascinating because I've never been in a musical.
Yeah.
So, you know, rehearsals are going to be part of it. And like those moments where they're struggling and they get it. And it's got all kinds of just small moments that make up creating this overall larger piece. I think it's got some great fucking scenes in it.
Yeah.
There's a good one on rewatch. So Andy Serkis is coming in.
I forget that he's in this. That's
right. Yeah, he's got the choreographer role.
That's right.
So it's when Timothy Spall gets the news that his song is cut And yes. all the, so Gilbert gives a speech, Sullivan gives a speech, the owners of the Savoy, and then Circus comes in, but there's a great shot from behind him after he's walked in and established. And this woman that is sitting closest to him is dying laughing, and they kept the cut. But she keeps her composure, yes, but she is dying laughing. She's doing everything she can to not destroy the scene.
Right.
So something happened beforehand because nothing, or they cut it out. I don't have the slightest clue.
Right, right. But hey, you got an impromptu reaction. Why not use it?
There's a real moment in all of this.
Yeah.
I don't know. So yeah, instead of watching more superhero stuff, I watched something I've already seen a number of times.
You're such a rebel.
It's not even that. It's just like, that sounds like more fun to me. Or let me go watch Amadeus again.
Oh, don't even start, man.
I know.
Fucking Amadeus, dude. I'd do it in a heartbeat. I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it's comfort food.
Yeah, it really is, man.
Yeah, I love them. Just if you buy into the world, man, it's really fantastic.
Just because for all the, you know, funny, childish, ridiculous moments, there is some very heavy drama in that movie throughout, you know, the relationship with his dad and the loveless marriage with Constance. Well, although he loves her at the beginning, he loves a lot of women. So it's like that marriage and the strains on that marriage and all the different things he's composing, the fact that he never really achieved success in his lifetime, all of it just feeding into the joy of why that movie is so eminently rewatchable, even though it could come across as a boring period piece to some people, like fucking Barry Lyndon is to me. Amadeus has so much life to it. So much fucking life.
Yeah, it's got a great energy that runs throughout. It sucks you in just from early on. It starts the dark with the insane asylum juxtaposed to how he got there.
Yeah.
As and the ending. Up too. Yeah, and the ending.
I absolve you. I absolve you. Oh, just the fuck, man. I might put it on again.
I know. So superheroes lose out to that sometimes. And it's also, I think, too, the customary habit is like we watch my wife and I a couple TV shows together.
Oh, yeah.
She goes to bed. So at that point, it's just like, do I really want to watch another TV show?
Yeah.
Maybe I either want something meatier or I watch YouTube videos.
What's the upkeep on your relationship in terms of the amount of time you have to spend in bed with your wife?
What do you mean?
Well, because we live together. Obviously, we're on 2 years now, but she's starting to go to bed earlier. Like she's starting to go to bed like 9. And I'm feeling this pressure. And she's not putting on the pressure. She always says, like, we're not two nuns. We don't have to travel together. But I'm feeling this kind of weird pressure. Maybe it's my own pressure. Like, should I go to bed at 9 with her so we have time sleeping near each other or snuggling or whatever? Or do I go to bed when I want to go to bed later on in the night and then in the morning just kind of stay in bed a little bit longer? So I don't know what the upkeep on the time is. You know, I don't want to feel like I'm shortchanging my girlfriend. You know, that's what I ask.
Yeah, I don't know that anyone can give you an answer to that just because you know her better than anyone.
True.
Catherine goes to bed much earlier than I do, but she also gets the mornings to herself.
Right.
While I sleep, and she'd like to have her mornings. So that's the trade-off. Just like, well, I stay up late and you like to get up early. She likes the house to herself and it's nice and quiet and she can do whatever she wants for a couple hours.
I think that's why we tricked out my office so that like, even when I'm here, she can have the rest of the house to do what she wants to do. And there are Saturdays where she just, you know, she's quite happy with me going in here to work on my projects or play video games or watch a movie for a review. She's very happy to do that. So yeah, it's an interesting point. She has her mornings, and I'm sure there are times where I sleep in where she's very happy to have the mornings and doing whatever she wants to do for sure.
I don't know. You'll have to, you can truly answer that. I can't tell you.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody that gives you advice on that is, it's all advice is autobiographical. And since I haven't lived that, it's tough for me to know.
Yeah.
How best to respond. I could, you know, feel it out. That's the, that's literally all I can come up with.
Yeah, that's fair.
Every once in again, maybe go to bed, or if she really doesn't, it looks like she doesn't care. And if you want to stay up, then stay up. I don't know. I don't know, man.
She's always good at saying like, you know, you don't have to come to bed, go to bed when I go to bed. It's okay. So, but,
yeah. is that not a statement or is it passive aggressive only?
Right, right, right. But I think she would let me know. She's not a bullshit artist, you know. But I mean, sometimes she'll be like, oh, you didn't cuddle with me when you came to bed. I was like, yeah, I came to bed. Like, do you don't remember? And sometimes she forgets. Like, dude, sometimes she does that whole thing where she talks at night and she doesn't, hey, we have a conversation. She doesn't remember it at all the next morning. Not even one thing about the conversation. So it's an interesting game to play when you live with somebody about how much time you should be spending there in the bed with them and what have you. Because yeah, she goes to, I like to stay up until at least 11. Then, because I live on 5 or 6 hours of sleep. So I'm back up again by 6, 7 a.m. the next morning, you know.
I stay up even later than that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I can come to bed, but I'm just going to be in bed awake until whatever time I normally fall asleep at.
Right. But my body won't, like what you do, I can't make my body do. Like I can't stay in bed. What do you sleep till 10 or 11 or 12 sometimes? Because you got that stand-up comedy routine schedule?
Yeah, I try and get up by 10 every day. Mm. Yeah. Some days it's 9, some days it's 10, 10:30 at the latest. Anything after that, I feel like an asshole.
Yeah.
Seriously, if I wake up and it's past 11, unless it's been like a long week, like Friday, I might sleep until 11.
Yeah, yeah, right. Of course.
Because I've just been up and it's been a long week, and that'll be my treat to myself. But anything past that, I'm like, you wasted the day. Because then it takes, I make a smoothie in the morning and have a coffee, and it takes me like 40 minutes to really get going.
Right. To get it right, yeah. Exactly. Get it going.
So if I wake up at noon, you're like 1 o'clock, I'm ready. Like that's sad. But there was a time in my life where it was one o'clock, I'm ready. 2 o'clock, I'm ready every day.
I'm a stand up comics, right? They have that.
Yeah, I was out till 3, 4 in the morning every night of the week.
Yeah.
Or the nights I'm up till 2. Well, I'm used to being out until 3 something.
Right.
So I just go home and watch something and stuff like that. Yeah, it used to be a shitload of late nights. Oh, it was. I mean, clubs would close and then go grab something to eat or shoot the shit or.
Of course.
Hang out for a while. You know, you're still amped up from the night.
Right.
You know, that's where a lot of people go turn to other things. But I cut those out of my life. So there is that, which I would totally have done.
Oh, here's what we should talk about. You want to do you want to be controversial? You can refuse to talk about it if you like, but what's your feelings on the Dave Chappelle controversy, man? You're a comic.
I have not watched it yet.
God damn it, Nost.
I have not watched it yet. It's nothing against Dave. I just haven't been in a mood for it lately.
Dave. Yeah. All right.
He's my favorite comic.
Yeah.
So, but all I've heard from other comics is it's a good special. It's one of his better in a long time.
I had some issues with what he said for sure, but I have no issues with the construction of that set.
Okay.
In fact, it's one of his best constructed sets since he came back in this whole run. It almost feels like all the other sets were building to this set. So, but yeah, I don't know.
And my feeling is he has the right to say whatever he likes. Welcome to America.
True. But so do the people who are offended by it.
Yeah, exactly. You can feel offended, and that is fine.
Yeah.
The collateral damage that now is extended to Netflix with the co-CEO having to step down.
Is that what happened today?
Yeah, it happened today.
Shut the fuck up.
I'm following the story, but I just haven't. I have not been in a mood to watch his newest special because I really want to enjoy it. I'm a huge fan.
Okay.
But trust me. Something's going on in Dave's world. Well, my guess is he's thought out whatever this outrage is going to be long before he did it. And he knows fully well. That's one of the things I love about Dave. It's very intelligent.
Oh yeah. He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's going to say and how people are going to react to it. Yeah.
Like earlier on, you go and listen to his stuff. He's a young kid and doesn't quite have the perspective, but they're still intelligent bits.
Mm-hmm.
So as he's matured and, you know, gotten wisdom and all that, the bits have just become more intelligent. So they don't have, on occasion, as many punchlines per minute as they used to.
Right.
But it's also he's imparting a greater point, at least in his mind. So it's a trade-off. And I just, that growth and, maturation over the years, I have been following. He was one of the guys that sucked me into loving comedy. Because it feels so much more intimate when you're listening to a special because it feels like you and them as opposed to watching a movie where you feel a distance from them.
Well, that's why you know, although Raw is not better than Delirious, I think there are some really good stories in Raw. When you look at Eddie, like, there are some great stories. And like, I don't know if intimate is the right word, right? Chappelle is more gifted than Eddie was at the intimate approach to comedy. Because, I mean, Dave feels like so laid back when he's talking to you. And especially as he's become like older, dude, he's become a man older. I, you know, you can go back and watch For What It's Worth, but it really, you just can't even compare. He just looks like he's gone on this fucking journey ever since Chappelle's show blew up and he walked away from the money. By the way, that's a great joke in the stand-up. You got to watch it when that joke comes up. It's brilliant. But like, seeing what his journey has been and seeing him now is, you know, he's heavier, he's bigger, he's smokes. Yeah, he's massive now, and not in a bad way. It's just like, it's a different person completely from the guy who's talking about the baby on the corner. It's a completely different comic.
Baby, what you doing out here? I can quote pretty much every special that I've seen of his because I love let's sprinkle some crack on him. Just get out here.
Just get on out of here.
Because Dave, I did know I couldn't do that.
Yeah, no, that's so good. What? In his just utter disbelief in the moment.
You
know, I had seen quite a few differences between the races jokes.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But that one to me is so unique that it makes it better. You're going to see a lot of the same jokes if you watch enough comedy. Just like, who can do it? It's like when you go to the Magic Castle.
Yeah.
And if you manage to see, you go down to the bar show, and then there's that bigger gallery bar out not too far from it in the downstairs area. But then there's the close-up magic room. So all three of those guys use a lot of the same tricks. And you can see
So you're seeing
two, three, four of the same tricks over the night, and you can go, huh, who did it best?
Right.
Sometimes it's where you sit can have an effect on how good the illusion is.
Right.
Because I've sat on that sleight of hand theater is what, like a 30, 40 seater.
Oh, yeah.
With the high rise. It's right when you walk in on the left hand side.
Right.
And it's a cool place. If you're ever in LA and you can get an invite somehow to the Magic Castle, go. You just got to wear a suit or a dress. But we had to stand in the walkways because it goes, they're like, it's built in riser. It's all wood room.
And
there's this little walkway that goes around all the seats up to the back. And we had to stand on that. So you get that side view of the sleight of hand. You could see a little bit more where he's palming the ball in the cups trick and stuff like that. Still, you have to specifically look for it.
Right.
But you see a trick enough, you're like, well, I think that guy did it best. But it's like I knew I could get away with it. Be like, I've seen a lot of those jokes. That's one of the best, if not, you know, in the discussion for me.
It's a cool little place.
Magic Castle, if you can go, I would go. Thankfully, I know a magician there, so I can go.
Oh, whenever you want.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice, dude.
If he's there that night, then I don't have to buy dinner. So I try and go if he's working that night.
Smart.
Yeah. Or he's going to be there to hang out, then I don't have to buy dinner and I can just go. But if he's going to be there, then you got to give you a pass, and then it's a pass more often than not where you got to buy dinner. I've never had to do that, so I just don't. I don't want to eat your dinner I don't want a $50 steak from a magic club, you know? I don't. So
let's see here. Jeremy Bowers wants to know, what's the Warlock announcement? Yeah. Will Poulter has been cast as Warlock.
Yes.
So he will be playing Warlock Will Poulter from like Detroit, from The Revenant, from We're the Millers. He was just in the Underground Railroad, and he's on that new series on Hulu, that limited series, Dope Sick. So he's in that. Interesting choice. Alex Russell here says, greeting from Boston. Sorry for the delayed arrival. Don't sweat it. I'm sure you're celebrating your fucking Red Sox being in the ALCS. No offense. No fucking offense.
That's one thing I have very little understanding of what's going on right now, which is Major League Baseball playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
Where are the Dodgers at?
Dodgers right now playing tonight, game 5. Whoever wins advances to the next next level here, to the ALC, to the NLCS. Mm. And they're tied with the Giants 2-2 right now.
I knew they were playing the Giants.
Yeah.
I knew they got they lost game one and then shellacked them game two.
Yes, they did. And then the wind, can you believe it? The wind of all things fucked the Dodgers in game three. And then they came back and smacked them in game four. So
the wind, where did they have to go back to San Fran, or was it down here?
No, it was in LA.
Oh, that. Yeah. The a few nights ago, dude, yes. It was banana times windy.
Yeah. Yeah. Two home run balls literally
hit a
were
wall,
stopped, wind. Hit a wall, and then fell down. And people were like,
I believe
what
it, man.
The fuck?
It was incredibly windy here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of cuttings from cactuses and succulents, but they're sitting out in pots out on the front.
Yeah.
And one got fully knocked ass over tea kettle over the railing, and another one got knocked down and broke like the terracotta.
Oh shit.
And then thankfully we started, you know, Catherine was walking up the stairs and was like, holy shit. And just ran in and put everything else inside. Yeah, it sucks. We have so many, but at this point you can't plant them because they go, well, you can, but they go dormant. So might as well just keep them in the pot.
Right. Right.
And so we got a shitload of pots in the house because just the way the season tied, you know, they were slow to grow. They're fucking cactuses. We need roots out of you bastards.
Right.
So anyway, now they're sitting there. But I mean, it was incredible. I thought I might be able to see some shingles pulled off of houses around here.
Oh, wow.
It was that windy.
Wow. That's crazy. That's crazy. Holy shit. We're 31 minutes into the fucking show. Jesus Christ. I didn't even know we were 31 minutes into the show. We got to start this show, Matt.
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, we're talking the top 10, our top 10 favorite remakes. So who knows how many might cross over, how many might not cross over. We shall see as we go through this. But what was our reason for this? Is there a remake coming out in this
week?
Yeah,
there's a remake coming out next week. Hold on, I can pull it up. I can't remember specifically what it was.
Yeah.
So next week coming out.
Oh, Dune.
Dune.
Yeah, yeah. For Dune. Right, right. Because it's a remake, which I saw and I fucking loved. So that's my three-word review or four-word review. I fucking loved it. So there you go.
You know what's funny? I forgot that's what we based it on. So yes. On my list, I was like, okay, well, I remember I was talking about it's a remake of a movie.
Right.
So I excluded anything that was like a reinterpretation of a book.
Yes.
Which
yes.
Dune is instead of a remake, technically. So I excluded a bunch of movies off my list. Yeah, it just was like, oh, I thought we said remake for a remake. So I just focused on I tried to. I may have screwed up.
Mm. I don't know if I put that in there. I don't know if I've got any. So we'll see, I guess, as we go along. Yeah.
That's how I remember. But clearly we didn't say that because Dune is based on a book. So
it is based on a book.
Yeah, I had some tough cuts. I was like, I don't know if that counts. And there's one that I'm like, that I'm willing to listen to the argument. Well, for the criteria that I set up, I kicked it off and I was like, I don't know, this seems out of the spirit of what we're talking about.
Right. Yeah.
But anyway, so that's how we set it. So I came up with my list that way.
Okay. All right. Well, how does the show work, Matt, if I can ask you?
Well, at 30 minutes in, we just start rifling through, baby. I do my bottom three. He does his bottom three. I do my next two. He does his next two. Then we trade our top fives. Once we're done, create the shows between the two of us.
There it is. All right.
Where shall we go? Given the criteria that I had, my 10 is Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Oh, okay. All right. Go ahead.
It's based on a movie called Bedtime Story, which I have never seen.
French?
Bedtime Story?
Yeah.
I don't believe so.
That's not. I didn't know if that was the American translation of
No.
Title.
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I loved it as a kid. I was I like Steve Martin, but him just being my favorite character was the one with the eye patch, like when they're at dinner and he's got the cork on his fork because clearly he's done this to himself before, but he has to use the bathroom. And they say, he says yes, and he just, thank you. Oh, that's what you were. It takes a second to understand. And he's like, he says, thank you. Oh, them buying into the different, you know, personas that they now are stuck with.
Oh, yeah.
And then the twist-a-roo that comes. If you've never seen it, I won't ruin that aspect of it. But I don't know. I was a big Steve Martin fan, and the idea that this could come up.
Yeah.
There's still, even with the not based on a book that I made up, as a criteria for myself. apparently did more work than I needed to.
I think it's good to be challenged. I got no issues with that.
Sure, sure. It excluded quite a few, and I saw my list. There were still about 13, 14 that I would consider. It's like, you know what? I'm more willing to watch Dirty Rotten Scoundrels than I am these others.
Right.
Even though
right.
they're good movies, I'm just more apt to rewatch that at this point. And it's Steve Martin, Michael Caine, and God, a woman that worked like crazy for four or five years.
Glenn Headley. Yeah. Yeah. That's the reason I missed that fucking question against Sam Levine, is because I got stuck between Lena Headey and Glenn Headley. So in my mind, I was like, what is it, Headley or is it Headey? I said Headley, and I just didn't. I totally fucked that, lost the match because I just fucking one word, one letter, you know. So I just enjoyed her performance because she's in Dick Tracy as well. She's a good actress.
Dick Tracy.
Yeah.
Yeah. She had like a 4 or 5 year run where she worked like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. She was a good actress, man.
And then still picked her spots after that. It's not like she completely fell off the map, but you know, when you're hot, you're hot.
Yeah.
So take the work while you get it, because very few people get to beat Tom Cruise.
That's true. That's fucking a true.
Yeah. So
sadly,
if that's what you want to be, you know, that run, you were in a lot of really interesting movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, 10 is Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Okay. Okay. Good choice. Not on my list, obviously. All right. What's your next one?
9 is A Star Is Born.
Okay. Where's that at for me? That is my 8. So we can talk about it, I guess. Yeah.
Perfect timing.
Yeah.
Why'd you have it at 8?
I actually like this. This one fought hard to be on my list. And, you know, sometimes when I compile these lists, I don't want to go always necessarily to the same old movies. You know, I try to find some newer ones and see if they can go toe to toe with some of my love of the older ones. But this one legitimately belongs here. And I think the performance of Bradley Cooper in here is stellar. Yes, Gaga is good. Absolutely. And we'll see how good she is in House of Gucci. The trailer looks fantastic.
Yeah.
But Sam Elliott and his relationship with Cooper throughout the movie is fantastic. The music is great. The way it's shot is fantastic. And the progression of the story leading to that, even though you see it coming, leading to that ending, is still really powerful. And it was one of the revelations, because I resisted that movie. I didn't go to the screening for it at Collider. Like I resisted it. And then went on my own one afternoon, and I was like, this is actually fucking good. Damn.
It ends up being 9 just because I did walk out of it going, why did this happen with her character?
Right. Exactly. That's the one thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's just like, what? Unless this is Gaga's story where this is close to her. I don't remember a viral hit, but.
Right.
She was this type of singer, and then they forced her into the pop thing, and she's taking her own experience and applying it to the story to give it more authenticity in her eyes. Like, this is what would happen today. I get that. It's just the viral nature of you're known for this. It seems like you would still stay in that vein. And then there were a couple other choices. But the story between the two of them, him alone, him and his brother, her and her dad, I like all of that.
Yeah.
I go back for a bunch of different scenes, like them the first night they really hang out together.
Oh my
it's just
God.
Magic.
Yeah, it is. I mean, her sitting on the curb.
The curb, parking. Yeah.
Oh, great, great scene. For sure. Yeah, yeah.
And when she comes onto the stage and sings with him that first time.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Even the piss scene works, man, because it's tragic. And it's not played for laughs. It's really tragic. And you're heartbroken watching that happen, you know, and... Just there's a lot of power in that movie. And I'll tell you this, I know everybody loves that Shallow song. That's not my favorite song. My favorite song is the one he sings in the drag club.
Yeah, that's my favorite too.
It's just him and the guitar, you know. Great lyrics in that song.
Yeah, I've listened to it several times.
Yeah.
You can find it on YouTube and just pop it straight on.
Maybe it's time to let the old ways die.
Yeah.
It's a fucking great song, man.
It's a great song.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so well directed. Cooper, I mean, dude, just, you know, fucking excellent, dude. And it's a movie I need to buy, I think, just for, like you said, Mac, just to watch the great scenes, you know, on your
it's got a bunch.
You know, there's so many good scenes. Yeah, but I agree with you. The thing with Lady Gaga is just a little bit unbelievable, and they kind of forced a little bit of the conflict by having that be something that she wouldn't she would do or agree to do, because it doesn't seem to fit the character that she presents at the beginning. It feels more like the Pink story and not necessarily her story, because Pink said that, like, when she first came out, they tried to make her, with that first song of hers that was a big hit, they tried to turn her into this like R&B songstress, and that's not really who she was, and tried to ogle her and what do they call it, sexualize her in a way that she didn't want to have happen. So she took back control of it, changed her look, changed her approach, changed her music, so she could be, it was more reflective of who she is.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's in Gaga's story as well, because she's obviously started out as a singer-songwriter playing gigs her mom took her to when she was in 15, 16, 17 years old. So
I just, in today's modern age, if you randomly saw a clip of some woman that went on stage with a guy that's the equivalent of Eddie Vedder meets Bob Dylan, then you have a certain, because it's, if it is a viral hit and millions of people are watching this, just like, okay, well, you're now known in this fashion, this world.
Yep.
I followed music for long enough to know that a good producer would see that and be like, okay, we got to keep pushing that angle, as opposed to taking a square peg and trying to put it into a round hole.
Yeah.
But once again, I can't tell her, maybe she did have input, and that's actually what happened. I have no fucking clue. It seemed incongruent. There were a couple other moments.
Yeah.
Like that. But I'm also, I think, nitpicking. I remember I said that to my sister-in-law, and she was like, wow, you experience movies in a completely different way than I do. And I was like, well, she's like, I'm not looking for that level of logic in my story. And I'm like, but when it's presented like real life, I am. If it was some fantastical thing, I'm willing to gloss over certain aspects of it. You know, it doesn't kill my enjoyment overall, but
it's like the curse of what we do, brother.
It's like when you're saying this is the best picture and be like, well, if I can find logical flaws to me, at least in this best picture, it's tougher for me to say that was the best movie, unless it's a weak year.
I don't know how many of my friends from Virginia will send me messages going like, dude, you are looking way too deep into this movie. I'm like, I know, but it's there.
I'm around certain people. I just bite my tongue. Yeah. They'll start talking about a movie and you're like, you're so fucking wrong right now. Dude, what's the point? I'm in the minority. They're having a good conversation. I'm not going to say. It's like around family or groups of friends that don't see movies as much as I do. And just like, let them have their opinion.
You know what? It doesn't matter. It doesn't. They paid money to go see it.
It doesn't. Dude, I heard my neighbors once having a basketball discussion. It was three bros. And their opinion was so wildly off. And I want to chime in. I've only said hi to the guy like twice.
Right.
And I had to do something where I skirted up next to his place. But, you know, we're fairly separated. I wanted to say I did not. I bit my tongue. I was like, you have no fucking clue what you're talking about right now. It's all right, though. Enjoy it. You're all agreeing. You're having a good conversation. Who the fuck am I?
That's life, man.
That's life. But when it's around family and stuff, it's like, I don't need to kill their buzz. They enjoyed it.
Of course. Yeah.
They specifically ask me, I might soft pedal and be like, it was all right.
Yeah.
But if they press and be like, well, here's all the things that I didn't like or did like.
You present it like, so, I mean, like, what did you guys think about, did this bother you at all? You do it like that.
And what was your thinking? What was your thought process when you saw this scene? Just... did it take your mind anywhere? Because my mind went, I won't say that until they give me, if they give me any kind of response. Oh, okay. I was just, I don't know if I interpreted it the same way everybody else did. Okay. Moving on.
Exactly.
I think for a lot of people, A Star Is Born might be higher.
Yeah, maybe. We're the old fogies.
Yeah, maybe we are.
All right. What's your eight?
My eight is Cape Fear.
That's my nine. Interesting. Okay.
All right.
Let's talk about it.
We have a little bit more commonality than we thought.
There we go. What a movie.
Pure intensity from De Niro.
Mm-hmm. Max Cady.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that name as long as I live.
And, you know, Nick Nolte, who always plays kind of unflappable by and large, a guy in this situation that would take charge much earlier. And he kind of does in this, but it's just... he's a regular guy.
Yeah.
And this dude that he helped put away is now up hunting him and his family. So the slow progression to him. You've frozen on my screen. You're right. Oh,
am I frozen?
Oh, thought you were frozen for
half. Oh, no. I was just listening to you. No.
Oh, I've never seen you stoically sit there like that before. Just, is he glitching? Oh, Oh, you like that compliment, did you? Oh, tell me.
But yes, oh, yes, anyway. I'm sorry they cut your song. I'm very sorry.
I'm very sorry. I'm very sorry. What's that you thought it was? Oh, that, do go on. Thank you. So good.
The way he stands in the movie, too, with the, the hand on the hip is brilliant.
When he's getting the arm. When he's getting dressed in his outfit the first time, and he abrades the guy that's the tailor that puts it all together.
Oh, my God. It's such a
good found out they can't have a corset. One cannot hit the diaphragmatical range. Everything is over the top. Over the top. I love it.
Oh,
the first time you see Spall and McKidd, Spall walking in, they're talking about that general that just got killed. I can't remember where the war's in. And they've got that valet. And he takes his coat off, whatever, and he turns around. And he's like, hat? And he taps the hat. It's this over the top. They shut the door. A door boy comes up, knocks on the door, and he's like, walk in. It's perfect. It's so over the top.
It is.
But they're getting into, am I full actor in this place?
Yeah.
You know, everything is dramatic, and fucking that movie is so good.
Anyway, wait. What
Cape Fear?
It's right, Cape Fear.
Cape Fear.
Yeah, I mean, this was the birth of Juliette Lewis as a name we know, and that scene with her and De Niro is so uncomfortable. And I'm certain that people look back on that scene and maybe have some trouble aspect, but that's the whole point of that scene, is for it to be troubling and unsettling and uncomfortable and blah. And of course, both actors had consent to do the things that they're doing in that scene. That's really unsettling. But it was also like kind of Jessica Lange on the tail end of Jessica Lange, like being a name that we know in movies and part of movies for sure. Or around that time, or kind of, you know, kind of, no, actually, no, I'm sorry. I'm wrong. Is that 91? Is that 91?
Yeah, she'd been around for a while.
So this is her coming back, I guess, because I think Blue Heaven or whatever it was that got her nominated was a few years later. But then, and so this was people waking up to the fact Jessica Lange could, you know, could be part of these movies again or whatever. So, yeah. And Nolte. Oh, my God. Nolte.
Yeah. Him transitioning finally into full Nick Nolte by the end.
God damn it, Max.
Yeah. I mean, he has a little bit of that as he gets flustered.
Yeah.
As tensions build throughout the movie. It was just weird to see Nick Nolte not be in charge in the scenes, because that's what I was associated with when I watched Cape Fear. I'd only see Nick Nolte, you know, another 48 hour or 48 hours, another 48, like those types of roles.
Right. Right. Right.
Where he's this big swinging dick.
Yeah.
But De Niro is what sticks with you.
Dude, the scene where he climbs out after he's ridden underneath the car for all those miles. And the dude looks at him like the devil has come back on earth. And De Niro like screws his head back or screws his hair back and just kind of looks at the dude. And you're like, holy fuck, man, this is scary as shit. And then when he starts speaking in tongues, as he starts swinging around and around in the water, you're like, what is happening?
Yeah, I don't know.
It is fucking awesome.
It is. I mean, it's counselor. That single word inflicts so much terror.
The fucking tattoo on his back.
Doing the pull-ups?
Oh, my God, yeah. The laughing.
Yeah. You know,
he's in the theater with the cigar. Oh, Jesus Christ, man. So perfect.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a De Niro that a lot of people go back and watch, because it's kind of in his dramatic world, you know, playing a Appalachian convict is slightly anachronistic.
Was he nominated for that one? I forget.
Maybe, but I don't recall that.
Yeah, I don't know if he was nominated for this one. So interesting, because it's a fucking incredible performance. I'm looking it up now, and I don't see whether he was.
But the weird thing is, it doesn't feel like a Scorsese.
Oh, it doesn't. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It doesn't
feel like a Scorsese. Yeah, the look of it, the way it's shot, like everything, it doesn't feel in any way, shape, or form. Like what I associate with Scorsese. Perhaps that's why people, I don't know, it's that plus a role you're not used to seeing De Niro in.
Yeah.
And they just, it doesn't jump off the page for him to go back and rewatch.
What was that guy become? Meet the Parents. I don't know.
Hey, still, don't you? I have all the faith in the world that if he wanted to put out an Oscar level performance next year, he totally could.
You're probably right. Yeah. Even that small part in American Hustle, he was fucking unsettling as hell.
Yeah, I have all the faith that he's built up enough goodwill. Let him have fun. Do the bad grandpas of the world. Who gives a shit? I don't care. It doesn't ding his legacy to me. So this, have fun. Go make the movies you want to make.
War on
Grandpa. Enjoy it, man.
So he was nominated for Cape Fear.
Okay. I did not recall that.
He was nominated against Anthony Hopkins for Silence of the Lambs.
That's why.
So, fuck.
That's why. So no one even pays any attention to who else was in that category because there's a clear winner.
Yeah.
Even though he only is on screen, what, like 22 minutes or something ridiculous?
Yeah.
He gets a leading.
Warren Beatty was nominated for Bugsy, Nolte for Prince of Tides, and Robin Williams for The Fisher King. Fuck, I didn't know he was nominated for Fisher King. He's great in Fisher King.
Yeah, there's two or three that I would imagine at the time easily had a better shot over De Niro and Cape Fear.
In no world is he best actor in that movie, Anthony Hopkins. He's a supporting actor.
Full on. Yeah. He's on screen like 20 minutes.
Yeah. The whole driving impetus of the film is her. It is not him. He helps her, but it's her determination. I mean, Ted Levine is probably on screen more than Hopkins. But I mean, he would have had to go up against Jack Palance and City Slickers, Tommy Lee Jones and JFK, Harvey Keitel.
Do you really think Ted Levine was on screen more?
I wonder. I mean, because there's no scenes with Hopkins. Well, no, I guess.
But they had those discussion scenes between the two of them.
Yeah.
I just think screen time wise, there's much more.
You think? Because there's some solo scenes with Levine when he's, you know, taking the girl, when he's talking to the girl.
Yeah, and she's down in the well and all that.
Yeah.
But it might be like 12 minutes of Levine screen time, 15 minutes. I feel like there were, because you had those longer, you know, back and forths between the two of them, that Hopkins is going to win that. Because then he has also, in that glass chamber.
Shit. Okay, so here's Matthew Stewart. I want to give credit to Matthew A. Stewart. He did a thing here last year. Screen time for Silence of the Lambs. Jodie Foster, 56 minutes and 2 seconds.
Okay.
Hopkins is in it for 24 minutes and 52 seconds. Levine is in for 10 minutes and 21 seconds. Scott Glenn for 9 minutes and 10. And then Anthony Heald, I can't remember the name of the doctor, for 8 minutes and 29 seconds. So, all right. So he's definitely there longer. But still, 24 minutes of a movie, that's a 2 hour and something movie. I don't think you should be best actor.
I know.
That's
weird. Well,
yeah.
Yeah, but from an excellent movie like that, who jumps off
right,
the most
of course,
he does?
Of course. Right, of course. Yeah. Well, there you go. But either way, that's the game. All right, so that was 8 for you?
That was 8.
All right, so we know my 9 and 8, which is Cape Fear and A Star is Born in Order. And then my 10 is The Birdcage.
Oh, that's a punt.
Okay, fair enough. Punt. Go ahead. What's your 7?
7 is The Thomas Crown Affair.
That is my 7. Holy shit.
Wow, even with... Okay, so maybe just a couple above? Anyway, who cares?
Maybe. Who cares?
Well, excellent timing.
Yes. Yes.
First and foremost. What's interesting, so in the original, he's a bank robber.
Yes.
And they changed it in this one because they didn't feel he'd be sympathetic as this billionaire that then goes out and robs banks on top of that. So the art theft was a way to kind of soften him and get the audience on the side. I think it works.
Yeah.
Perfectly.
Yeah. Plus casting Pierce, man.
Yeah, just the smooth panache. I wish... Throw some guns in this and then some intrigue, and we could call this a Bond, and I think that's his best Bond.
That's a good point. That's an excellent point, actually.
Yeah, I think easily his best Bond to me, because it's not the over-the-top. I'm not a fan of the Pierce Brosnan years. People know that.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho. Yeah. Him, Rene Russo is great.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis Leary is surprisingly good.
He is good as the police detective. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I say surprisingly because it not asked to do that much. So
right.
The fact that he's memorable in those small scenes, it's a testament to, how well he came to do his job that day.
Right.
But the back and forth between Pierce and Renee, they have this nice little cat and mouse, like who's the cat, who's the mouse, who's the one that's kind of playing with the other type of thing.
It's sexy. It's Renee's most confident performance.
Okay.
In my opinion. And it brings so much coolness to that movie, their relationship, their back and forth, their chemistry. It's so well done. you know, I mean, Larry does a good job, but Larry is the odd man out in this. I mean, he's like varsity watching pro football players play. Like, he's just, I mean, that's what it is. It's just,
yeah,
like,
but he's only
a whole nother realm, man.
You just need to come in and add some sort of roadblock to this.
Yeah, exactly.
That is the role, and he does it. And
yeah,
it's really about them.
The whole final sequence with the paintings and the people wearing the hats and the apples and all of it. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Great music choice too. It fits it.
Yes.
It's like classy chaotic. And it fits this classy chaotic type of.
Yeah.
Who are you going to run to? It's a nice little beat on the piano. Fucking. Yeah. So it's got a lot of the smooth lifestyle that you assume somebody out there must be living.
Yes.
Yeah. And you don't hate him for it. You're like, nah, this dude seems all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like this guy. I'd like to be friends with this dude. Whereas unfortunately, most of them are like that Martin Shrekel or whatever the hell that guy's name is.
That guy. Yeah.
I don't think he had near the money of this, but that's what I assume a lot of those guys are like.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, neither here nor there. So yeah, it's got this nice 1% life, but he's kind of bored with it and
right.
A little bit of a midlife crisis and starts to steal art to basically get his shits in.
Yeah.
Never hurts the art. You know, it's in pristine condition. As far as we know, he is respectful of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like you said, that's another approach to making him a redeemable character, even though he is a criminal.
Yeah.
He is such a smooth, charming guy. Plus, what he's doing is not really hurting the paintings at all. So, yeah.
Yes. It's just hurting whoever owns that painting. But then you assume if it's not the museum itself, perhaps it's another private collector that donated it. And he's like, well, what's the foul here? You know?
Exactly.
What's the foul? It's another dude that has $1 billion. I think we're fine.
Yeah.
I think we're fine. Yeah, it's like almost a victimless crime, practically.
James Petty is asking us, loved that film better than the original? Yeah, I would say it's better than
the original.
So, yeah. Yeah. Whereas The Getaway, the Alec Baldwin remake of the Steve McQueen original, is not as good as the original, but certainly Thomas Crown Affair. I think this one is better, for sure. All right. what's your six?
My six is Ocean's 11.
Yeah, it didn't make my list. I cut it for Thomas Crown Affair. I was like, all right, which one do I want that's cool? And I prefer Ocean's 13 over all of them, so I couldn't put it on. But it's like 11 or 12 on my list.
Well, I'm guessing you have one or two movies that, had I not created my stupid fucking rules, I would have on my list. There's one for sure. It's just like, well, that is, to me, much better, and it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I kicked off another because it'd be like, well, technically they've remade two from that dude.
Yeah.
So I'm only gonna take one. You know what I'm saying right now.
I think so. We'll see. We'll see.
I think you do.
I might surprise you though. I might surprise you. So you're sick. Oh, go ahead, man. So Ocean's 11. So, go ahead,
buddy. Ocean's 11. I mean, on the outside looking in, while the stakes are low because it's not going to be some big, huge action movie with a massive bloated budget, it's mostly just paying these guys salaries and then sets, just like small set. Well, they got to recreate casinos and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And to create a new era of cool within the cinematic world, it's kind of rare. It's like when somebody gives themselves a nickname and we all agree, I'm fine with that nickname.
Yeah.
If you come in going, we're going to be cool. It's actually kind of a difficult hill to get over the top of.
Mm-hmm.
And they pull it off by having this menagerie of various characters all synced together to pull off one job. But I believe Clooney would be the captain of this ship, and that could be the most key. He's not trying to do Sinatra where, once again, for lack of a better phrase, he's the big swinging dick in the room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just does it with charm and panache. And all the people that are bouncing off him. It's also like, it's Damon really getting elevated along with that and Bourne Identity.
Yep.
Made him purely solid gold A-list as far as you're on league with all these guys. You're just as cool, even though when you stand next to Clooney and Pitt, they kind of out handsome you, but there's right. nothing wrong with that. I can't imagine how Cro-Magnon I would look next to them.
And also, I think Ripley is a year or two after or a year or two before. So not only does he have superstar status off both of those films, he it's also before. Has independent cred.
Yeah, when he's got the integrity, yeah, he's got yeah. Goodwill and Talented Mr. Ripley, and yep. what Dogma? Dogma might be oh, in God. Between.
Fuck Dogma.
Oh, I'm just saying he. Yeah. But Kevin Smith is still an indie darling.
Yeah. Yes.
Especially at that time, it's on the tail end of his indie darlingness. But he had all that cool. But then to elevate above that, where you're not, you know, the art school kids, you also get to hang out with the jocks. You know what I mean? Yeah. You get yeah. your. You get to cross all worlds and do whatever you like.
Yeah.
But yeah, to pull off that, it's a ridiculously fun movie.
Mm-hmm.
If you like heist films, it's a great heist film.
Yeah, it is. It is absolutely. And I love the, and there's some really funny moments. I mean, the handshake thing with Bernie Mac and the moisturizing of the hands or moisturizing of the sure. skin is so funny. And then I think in Ocean's 11 is when they run over his toy, like the where James Caan and Casey or Scott Caan and Casey Affleck are going at each other as brothers. I mean, that's incredible to think about too.
Like Casey like the Affleck rolling cart
in the film. It, you know, this is a future Oscar winner being yeah. in that film.
Oh, him and Scott Caan.
Scott Caan, yeah.
Which was so strange. Scott Caan was the weird one to me, and be like, are they trying to push Scott Caan on us? You know what I mean? They were trying to fill out the cast, and. He's got an agent that already had somebody else or two other people in the cast.
Yeah.
They're like, just take my third guy.
You got to back pocket. You got to take him. If you want yeah. these two, you're going to have to put Scott Caan.
I saw that happen with a dude I know. He sold his special. And we're all like, man, good for you. And it right. went to, I won't say what it is because mm-hmm. I don't want to out who the individual is. But it went to, well, let's just say one of the two big boys.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, yeah. And he's like, well, you know, my manager was already selling them like three others. So they just went ahead and bought mine as well. I'm not saying it's a bad special, but hey. We're all like, man, good. I expected those.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. Okay.
Hey, whatever it takes.
Yeah. No, I didn't begrudge him a damn thing. Good for you. Good for exactly. you.
You know what? Good for you, Spider. Get yeah. in there.
So Scott Caan to me watching the theater was like, are they trying to push? And then Hawaii 5-0 came a few years after that.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah, he was in a few things in between where it seemed like he was getting a small run while they yeah. still pushing, and then eventually Y50.
I see people mentioning him for the new Wolverine. I'm like, you just stop it.
No, first off, he's too old.
Yeah.
Second off,
he ain't got the chops to play Wolverine.
Well, it's Scott Caan.
And Garcia is a great villain in the movie too, like a great antagonist, rather not villain but antagonist.
Yeah,
he's fantastic to play that.
Don Cheadle with an over-the-top accent.
Oh God, so many British people I speak to hate that accent.
And he's an excellent actor.
He is.
Don Cheadle is awesome, and that accent is really basically you fell asleep every night watching Snatch.
You know we're
you didn't work with a dialect coach. You did Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels is all you've ever seen. It's the only movie you love. And you're like, I can do this.
Oh, I randomly stumbled upon a TikTok where the guy who plays Bricktop.
Sure.
He is having coffee at a cafe somewhere. And this guy walks up to him and is like, my friend is such a massive fan of the film. Can you like, you know, fucking cuss him out or read him the right act? And he's like, hey, what's your friend's name? And then he goes on this 30-second tirade about this guy. And it's excellent. And he goes right back to his coffee. It's fucking.
I am definitely searching that out. Bricktop was awesome.
Yes. He's a great character, man.
Oh, the explanation of the pigs.
Oh, yeah, man.
The best part, my favorite part of it is he's somewhat bored in the moment. Because
yes.
he doesn't feel like having to teach another person this lesson of not wanting to fuck with them.
Right.
At the same time, he is very pleased with himself that this is how he disposes of people. And he walks that line in between the two so beautifully.
He does.
So I would have taken way more Bricktop in that movie. But I realize it's a big Guy Ritchie ensemble, so I'm happy with what I got.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking, I am definitely looking. I'm writing that down.
He says something like, "You're on notice, son. You're fucking on notice, son."
Yeah,
something
exactly. Like
that. It's brilliant, man.
You listen here. Just, it's like a thicker Michael Caine.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's absolutely a thicker Michael Caine for sure. Do you know what Nemesis is?
Yeah,
it's fucking brilliant. Oh, that film. That's, I think that's my favorite one. Between that one and Lockstock, that's my favorite.
I think Snatch has more like individual characters that it just jump off the screen for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like the almost grad school feel of Lockstock. The shoestring budget of it, and they still pull off and have a ton of different actors in it. I like them both kind of equally for different reasons.
Yeah, agreed.
Because Snatch easily could have failed once you pump more money into this formula, and it didn't. It just comes across as cooler.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Agreed. Yeah.
But anyway, Ocean's 11. That's my six. Okay. What do you got?
So my six is The Fly, the Jeff Goldblum one.
I believe it's based on a book.
How dare you?
I cut it. That's
how dare
once
you?
Again, the bullshit that I made up.
Let me see here. Might be right, but let me
see. Actually, no, hold on. I am not.
You're not.
The Fly is not based on a book.
I know. I thought it was the original one with Vincent Price, but I don't see that. Okay. All right. Yeah. This, I mean, I didn't know what to expect from this movie when I saw it. And I saw it. It just is one of these films that I went back to see in theaters multiple times, then bought the VHS and watched it multiple times growing up, because there's just something about Goldblum's performance. This is peak Goldblum in the early phase, a stretch of his career. This is where he goes from being like kind of the ensemble character to being a lead. Yeah. And this film really does it. He's so magnetic. He's so great. And when he goes to the thing and becomes the Fly, he goes next level with the performance. You know, he's in such fantastic shape, and he's this angry guy with the finger. And so you understand that there's a lot of power here, and he's tall, but then you cast Gina Davis, who is as tall as he is. So he's a perfect match. Then they actually got together in real life, which I thought was cool for the time that they were together. But like what he brings to the film, and Cronenberg is the director bringing that dread, it's better than the original. And the original is pretty good. And especially that ending sequence with the original is good. It's pretty horrific. And so the ending here is heartbreaking. He turned it into a romance, a tragic romance, because she really loves him. Even when he's becoming Brendel Fly, she loves him as he's falling apart, as his ear comes off, his teeth are like, she's still there because there's a genuine affection for him. But the horror in the movie is also a great selling point. I mean, when he regurgitates on homie's ankle and on his hand, and it melts, right? And you see the smoke coming off the hand. It's fantastic. And it could be schlocky, and it isn't. It actually has a really strong center in their relationship. Yeah. Which is what I love about the movie, honestly. That's what I come back to every time. All the other stuff is great, but that relationship is what is the anchor of the movie.
Yeah. I wrote it down, but I knew it had no shot for me.
Fair enough.
I just don't go back to rewatch. For all the things that you brought up, I don't want to go down that track. I watched it when I was a kid, and it scared me and depressed me.
Okay.
So I've always kind of held that against it, even though everything you're saying, it could be cartoonish and over the top.
Right.
And it is not.
No, which I love. I mean, I love how good it is. And I love how they were able to get it right. And it still holds up. I watched it the other day for I was a guest on a podcast for one of the people in the Finstock Exchange. And I watched it again so we could talk about it. And I was like, this thing still holds up. It still has the same electricity that it did back in the 80s. So. All right. Anyway, well, let's take a quick break, right, Matt, before we jump into our top fives and hear from our sponsors. And we'll be right back right after this. And we're back, Matt Nost. We're getting into our top five. Start us off.
That we are. All right. At five, I've got The Departed.
Yeah. Didn't make my list. Go ahead.
So it's one I flirted because it was down to like 8, 9, and then it moved up to like 6, 7, and then it bumped up to 5 just for the overall quality of the film in and of itself. I don't think it has the impact of other Scorsese's for me. I know a lot of people love The Departed and think it's one of, you know, his best. But I also think when you bring that many huge actors to every single stinking role,
yeah,
it's really tough. Even though they're all excellent,
yeah,
it's will we as an audience buy into, you know, Martin Sheen as the captain, Mark Wahlberg as a very small character over on the side over here on top of. We've already seen Damon and DiCaprio and Jack Nicholson. And I mean, it just keeps going and going and going.
Right.
So it could kind of take you out of it. And the fact that Scorsese is able to balance all those things and keep the tension throughout.
Yeah.
I still think it's a really entertaining and engaging movie. Plus, for the growth of somebody like DiCaprio on a run of where everything he's in is in this kind of contention, still is.
Mm-hmm.
But to enter into the early section of that where, yep, this guy, by and large, knows how to pick them. It's impressive because, you know, if you look at Damon's, his was kind of somewhat more up and down. Or you look at anybody else's, it's a little bit, DiCaprio manages to pick more often than not. If it doesn't have the box office success, it still has the critical.
Yeah.
Like, when was the last time you saw him have something that bombed on both fronts?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Look. I guess that's a good point. Because
everybody else in that cast, you can do it. Wahlberg, you can do it. Matt Damon, you can do it. Jack Nicholson, you can do it.
Yeah.
And so far, DiCaprio, by and large, can hit those two criteria pretty often.
You're right.
If not one of the two.
You're not wrong, man.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
Part of this string. And also, I like the fact that maybe it gets people to go back and watch Infernal Affairs and other cinema from that kind of section of the world that they may not. Although now with the addition of like Squid Game and stuff.
Yeah.
It maybe that sparks more what else is out there type of thing. Because I know I haven't seen a lot of it, but I've seen more than most.
Yeah.
And that's not saying much, though, unfortunately, because there's some excellent stuff that you can easily go back for, like Old Boy or Train to Busan or The Raid. Or,
oh, totally. There's so much to explore.
Yeah, there's tons. Yeah. And there's a bunch that you go back and see Hard Boiled.
Yeah. The John Hell yeah. Killer.
Then go into the Chow Yun Fat stuff and be like, well, there's a whole, canon of stuff that I've never heard of.
Exactly.
And hopefully it opens it up. It was a combination of all those factors, but I've always been impressed by DiCaprio because.
Yeah. I think he's great in the movie. I think actually he outacts Damon in the movie.
I think he does easily.
And my only issue with the movie is I think Jack is so fucking over the top with the rat. Well, sorry, with the cocaine and the, I smell a rat and he's doing the thing. And so for me, it takes me a little bit out of the movie. Whereas people thought he was a little over the top in A Few Good Men, I think he works in that movie. And I think in this movie, he kind of takes me out when he indulges a little bit more of the mania of himself. And it becomes cartoonish. When you see what Johnny Depp was able to do with that Whitey Bulger character in Black Mass, you're like, see, this, that is menacing. That is unsettling. I don't know if
I agree.
Fit in the movie though. So, that's another way to look at this too.
Yeah. I think Depp deserved an Oscar nom, even though the movie is not Oscar caliber.
Right. Right.
But he is, those eyes are beyond haunting.
Dude.
And I think the choice with Nicholson in this is kind of be closer to De Niro and Untouchables. We need you to come in and be this over-the-top presence so you can see why somebody like Damon might be willing to play both sides.
Yeah.
He would have the respect for him going in and then the fear once he's in the position.
Right, right.
So I bought into his a little bit more, but I understand the objection when you're watching it.
Yeah.
It doesn't not make sense.
Right. So my number five is Ben-Hur. And I think that's the one that you could argue is based on a book because it's by a book from a general, I think, who wrote the original book. And then they did that as a black and white movie. And then
like 10 years before.
Right. And then redid this one in color with Charlton Heston. So Ben-Hur is one of my favorite movies, bar none, period. It's a great epic. It's one I watch every Easter. I go to see it in the theater when I was living in LA, whenever they'd show it in one of those restoration houses, I'd go see it again. So it's just one of those things that appeals to me on so many levels. And it's, it's also like kind of like a nostalgic thing for me because my dad and I used to watch it all the time growing up in our family. My dad was uber religious. And so the connective tissue of that will always carry a lot of weight with me. So the movie is, and it's a damn good movie. And it's, I think it's Heston's greatest performance as an actor. And I think it won Best Picture in like 11 or 10 Oscars or something like that. So that's why it's just got so many things going for it that I thoroughly enjoy, and a really powerful story too. So,
Ben, excellent choice.
Thanks, man. All right. What's your four?
My four is The Mummy.
Please.
Find me.
Please.
Egyptology movie that you like.
It's my turn. I got to pee now. You talk about the movie.
Okay. Not a fan of The Mummy. It is. So it's tough when you're thinking about movies about Egypt that you like, you know, this, I could go to Prince of Egypt, Stargate. There's a few others. So to pull that world off, I think Brendan Fraser is at his best. This was the introduction to Rachel Weisz for me. And this somewhat charming love story that they end up having by the end of it. Now, what comes later, and we can hash that out on a different day. I still haven't seen number three all the way through personally. Just, I didn't enjoy it. And I was like, I'm good. I don't need to see the rest of this. I still love the first one. It's a shitload of fun. I love being the idea of, you know, tomb raiding in essence is what they're doing. Something that is frowned upon now, and rightly so, because I would rather have that stuff preserved and put into a museum or kept in its place, like whatever makes the most sense. But the romanticism of that era still has a pull for me. I mean, Indiana Jones is arguably my favorite movie character of all time. So to have more of a swashbuckling Indy meets Han Solo type of individual. So The Mummy. So that is my four.
It's a great choice. I mean, look, that series has been fun. Both those first two ones are great, right? I never did see the third one with Jet Li, but I like those
seen
first two.
A chunk of it and I turned it off.
Yeah. See, there you go.
Yeah.
It's like, just a magic without Rachel Weisz that's missing. Like, you know what I'm saying? You can't, if you don't have Rachel Weisz, there's just something missing.
I mean, what's interesting in looking back now, at the time, in no way did I feel like Rachel Weisz was going to be in a ton of movies after that I love.
Right. Right.
Like The Favorite, she is awesome. I enjoyed living hell out of her performance in Lobster. And yeah.
Oh my God. So good in Lobster.
There's like 10 other things. And now she's part of Marvel, technically.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if her character ever comes back. Who knows? The deal has been worked out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Good, you know, good point.
Scarlett has been made whole, so perhaps now there won't be any ill will towards Pugh and Rachel Weisz and David Harbour if they decide to do something else with them.
Scarlett, are we whole? Are we whole? Are we good?
She's good. She's good. I don't know what the restitution was, but I think I agreed with her in the Disney is going to pay her a chunk of money because they can't piss off Hollywood. That's what that would be doing.
Of course. Yeah.
Who's going to want to work with you that's not already in contract or is going to figure out, you know, basically stick it to you as best they can.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Just pay her. It creates more goodwill. You have billions upon billions of dollars. It's fine. She's made you. She's helped make you billions upon billions of dollars. It's fine.
Big deal.
The Mummy, I rewatched it during quarantine at some point.
I enjoy
that movie. It's got some flaws and whatnot, but the character of Benny, the villain, is kind of a perfect foil. Dude that used to be technically on his side, but he's really only on Benny's side. And you know, you can tell that Fraser's been burned by that in the past, and now knows not to trust him.
Right. Right.
You know, the nice back and forth between the two of them, like when they get off the boat and Benny's all jazzed because they have horses and whatnot. He's like, that's great, but you're on the wrong side. And that gives him more joy knowing that he needs horses right now. But the idea that Benny is losing in this moment because he is such a jerk fills me with more joy than having a horse.
That's true. Okay. So then my number four is True Grit.
Yeah, it's I couldn't because of the book thing.
Oh, fair enough. Man, this one is so fucking good, man. I still go back to it and watch it every once in a while. I have it on my computer, so if I'm ever traveling or anything or on a plane, it's always an option for me just to watch Jeff Bridges' performance. Yes, Hailee Steinfeld is good as well. Josh Brolin, Barry Pepper, all good. But of course, this is very much Jeff Bridges' movie. And Matt Damon, of course, is fantastic as well as mm-hmm. LaBeouf. But the direction of the Coen brothers, I didn't know they could do a film like this. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, you put this with No Country for Old Men, and you're like, where was this? Like, how can you make how can you guys make movies like this? You fucking did Raising Arizona. How the fuck?
But Raising Arizona is amazing. Who can make Raising Arizona?
Yeah, true. That's what I'm saying. But there's a comedic aspect to that, right? That's fun. And Miller's Crossing is great. It's a great mobster movie. But I just didn't know that they could like really adapt that kind of approach to it. And they went next level with these two movies, in my opinion, as filmmakers. I mean, remember, they did Intolerable Cruelty and Lady Killers as well. So I just thought.
Once again.
Yeah.
You know, it happens to the best of the best.
I know.
That's why DiCaprio's run is all the more impressive. Anybody that's operating at that level, you're bound to have clunkers.
Yeah.
You know, happens to directors, to writers, individuals that act of all sorts.
Right. It's very true. The it's a beautiful Western. It's a fantastic Western. It's a great remake, and it's better than the original, Matt. I know John Wayne won the Oscar for his performance in that original True Grit, but Jeff Bridges outacts the shit out of him in this version of the film, you know.
I agree. I don't think it's close in my book, but I also didn't grow up with John Wayne.
Right.
So that can easily make a difference.
John Wayne.
Yeah. I mean, I like him, but not to the degree that he worked as much as he did. You know? I mean, I get it, but I don't buy into his swagger machismo as much as he thinks I should. So if the artifice is destroyed, then the character doesn't have a big component of what I'm assuming he needs.
There's a comfort level with him. I enjoy the movies with him, you know, Rio Bravo and Red River and all those. I enjoy like Searchers. Certainly Searchers. Jesus Christ. That's a great film, but yeah, he's more comfort food. You know what I'm saying? And I enjoy that about him. All right. What's your three, my man?
My three is the pun from earlier, Birdcage.
Oh, speaking of John Wayne, go ahead, man.
You want to talk about fun. That's all this movie is.
True.
Wrapped up in a nice multi-layered love story where you see the connections from all kinds of different people between Williams and Nathan Lane's relationship to their son and his girlfriend, and then the girlfriend's parents' relationship, mm-hmm. and then the commingling of all these worlds and the overall acceptance by the end that we're all just people and we all want what's best for our kids.
Yeah.
And in your moment of crisis, we will happily help you out because we're just good people.
Yeah. Yeah.
We would hope you would do the same for us. And now in the future, we're all assuming they do because they end on such a high note.
Yeah.
And it's another reason to love Robin Williams. And, you know, unlike what the haters say, I'd like to see that biopic. So let's get that jumping.
I am not hating on Jamie. I love Jamie.
I didn't specifically say you. I just said to the haters out there.
There's no haters out there.
I think there are some. I think there are some. God. You know, some people are saying, yeah, show me more type of thing. I don't remember specifically what I've heard or read, but that rings a little true.
Oh man, yeah, it's such a great remake of the original. Apparently is very good. I've never seen the French original, but apparently the French original is really good. But this film, once again, another film that for all the jokes and everything like that, there's a real heart and relationship to this movie that centers it, right? The relationship between Robin Williams and Nathan Lane. By the way, if you're not watching Only Murders in the Building, it's so fucking good, man.
It takes four episodes. It took four episodes for me to get into, maybe five.
Once it clicks, though,
I want Martin Short in every scene. He's so good.
He is. But Nathan Lane, this is some of the best work I've seen Nathan Lane do.
Quite possibly, yeah.
And no spoilers.
In a while.
Like, Yeah, and no spoilers, but this isn't a character I've never seen him play this confidently. Mm. And it's unsettling. And you're just, wow, this is a gear you have, you know, and I appreciate that as he's an older actor now, that kind of bitchiness can get used in a certain way. And it's powerfully used in the show. But anyway, in this film, he's just so good at this, you know, performer who's like facing the possible, like, you know, getting older and the end of being the ingenue, has to kind of transition and is, you know, kind of threatened by that when he sees the younger, all the younger dancers, thinks his husband might be looking towards other younger people. Yeah. Led astray, all that. But then you have the other relationship, as you said, like between the, Calista Flockhart and the dude, Dan Futterman, I think is the guy's name.
That sounds right.
And then you got Hackman and all of that. And Diane Wiest, who's excellent. So it's just, it's a sweet, funny, but thought-provoking comedy that has two genuinely strong relationships at the center of them, and some great character work all around, including Hank Azaria, who is hilarious in that role. And I know he got stuff or shit for voicing Apu, but I like his Latino accent in this movie, and I got no problem with Hank Azaria doing that accent in this movie. He's very funny. So there you go.
I agree.
It's been approved.
It has been approved. Sorry, I got a text that I had to respond to.
Oh, no worries, man. No worries.
Been waiting on it and then finally came in.
No worries. So that was your three?
That was my three. What do you got? Okay.
My three is Scarface.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I know you. I knew it would be on your list.
Literally watched it again 2 weeks ago.
What?
I did. Maybe it's 3 weeks ago.
It's so good.
So not.
You're an insane person. That film is so fucking good. Love it. It's classic. It is a classic. I don't want to hear any arguments against that. It is just one of those films that everybody talks about. People still have Scarface themed birthday parties to the movie. It's something that we just are recording right now. There Will Be Blood, and the gentleman we're recording with is one of the sound engineers at the Lucasfilm Ranch. Skywalker Sound, really cool dude. And he said after we were done recording, if you guys ever do Scarface, I want to come on the show. So I just shocked the shit out of us that that's the film that he would want to talk with us about. So, you know, I'm just saying, taste.
Bad taste has no limit.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Sometimes it infects like the plague and, you know, corrupts everybody's DNA into believing a certain thing that just isn't true.
Pacino is great in the movie. Once again, another honorary Latino performance there from Pacino. Stephen Bauer is good. Loggia's hilarious. Michelle
Loggia's.
Oh my God, Loggia's.
I love Robert Loggia.
He's
great. Do not get me wrong. To believe that that guy is the drug kingpin of Miami, get the fuck out of here.
Have you been to Miami?
Get right the fuck out of here. Not happening.
Watch those Cocaine Cowboys documentaries and you'll see how crazy those fuckers are.
Yeah, totally, okay. Fit in. And Loggia looks like the cops on the other side of this argument, not the drug kingpin of Miami.
Fair enough.
I will say Pacino he made a choice. He fully commits to the choice.
Yeah.
And he honors that character. In no way do I fault him for any of it. If you're going to make this choice, you owned it 100%. Mm-hmm. And I think it works really well in certain scenes, like the chainsaw scene.
Oh my God.
Given
that's a rough scene, man.
The blind machismo of he has to strut in here. He doesn't, you know, what is this, his second deal with the Colombians?
You'll get to know me when you start fucking around, man.
It has moments like that, but it's just
moments.
It's
the whole fucking movie is it's classic.
I would recast everybody except for Pacino and Pfeiffer. Literally everybody. Well, F. Murray Abraham, I kind
come
of
on.
Buy, but
he's
kind
great
of
as
don't.
Omar. Come on.
He is, but I don't buy him in the drug world either.
What do you think the drug world is? Do you think it's a bunch of Thomas Crown Affair motherfuckers in the drug world?
No. No, I'm just saying everything else that I've seen him in
he's
before
slimy
that,
as fuck in that movie.
And yeah, but he's more slimy in an upper crust kind of way.
What?
Not slimy in a I'm from the streets kind of way.
What are you talking about?
No, I'm saying F. Murray Abraham, when he plays slimy to me, always comes across as upper crust slimy. Even that's if he's it. Playing a blue collar character, I still see upper crust.
I couldn't disagree with you more.
All right. By the way, he's fantastic in Law and Order Criminal Intent when he comes on as Goren's dad. Like, he's fucking great.
His shittiness in Finding Forrester, I think, is the closest to who he may actually be. Yes. And that, to me, it's upper crust, snooty, asshole. That, to me, is F. Murray Abraham. Fucking to a T. That is
that's
precisely.
Old F. Murray. Young F. Murray could
go watch it's, that Oscar on. Speech of his. You can see it. He's got a confidence. And it's a, I went to the best schools.
That's true.
I've been studying at this. I am the best.
He's always radiated that.
Yeah, not the blustering confidence of somebody like a Dirk Diggler.
Yeah.
Like, Mom, you don't know what I'm going to do with my life. Yeah, F. Murray's never had that. No. So that's why. It's just like, I love F. Murray.
Yeah. Damn right you do.
But I think everybody outside of Pacino and fucking Pfeiffer, and I would also tell Pacino, let's turn it down to 9.
Oh, my 11? God. You're insane.
In certain scenes.
It's not a good movie if you turn it down.
I don't mind if it goes to 11 in some scenes, but hey,
oh my God.
There's a few moments where just like, this is so over the top.
Ridiculous. There's nothing over the top in that movie.
There's a lot over the top in that movie.
You're insane. The tiger? Come on.
The baseball hat was turned around 15 minutes into production. It's straight over the top.
You're insane. Brian De Palma, fantastic. All right, what's your two?
My deuce is the Magnificent Seven.
That's my deuce, Magnificent Seven. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I didn't take the other Kurosawa.
Unofficial. Me too, because I prefer The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, so, and it's not a remake.
Exactly, and it's not.
Yeah.
And I'm already doing this one, so I'll just take one from Kurosawa.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a better one than the Kurosawa one.
Correct.
Right. And I don't think Magnificent Seven is better than Seven Samurai, but it manages to be its own thing, even though it's based on Seven Samurai. It manages to have its own credibility, in my opinion. Yeah.
True. It makes a great movie out of another great movie.
Yes.
Whereas A Fistful of Dollars, I think, makes a really excellent movie out of another really excellent movie.
Yes. Right.
It's like, wow, it's kind of a no-brainer to me. I'd rather watch... I don't know. It depends on what kind of mood I'm in. If I'm in a Clint mood, I'd watch A Fistful of Dollars before Magnificent Seven. But if I'm not in a Clint mood, I would watch Magnificent. So could be kind of a 50. Anyway, neither here nor there.
Okay.
Fantastic ensemble cast.
You sound like Kyrie Irving.
Do I? Look, I'm not anti-vax. Well, this is news to everybody.
This is the one what did I post? I posted the one he said. He said... What did he say? He said, don't believe that I'm retiring. Don't believe that.
Oh, yeah.
No. I'm going to give this up. I'm going to give up this game for a vaccine.
Yeah, I'm not done with the game
staying
yet.
Unvaccinated. It's like, which, what?
And what James Harden and Kevin Durant have both been quoted as saying, basically, I respect Kyrie for standing by his convictions, but this team, we're focused on the team and the goal of winning a championship.
Yeah.
It's like, right. That's the line that they're all going to walk, and they've all talked about it off air. Yeah, between that and Ben Simmons, man, it's... Yeah. There's all kinds of now stories coming out about that stuff too.
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah, right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Do you see the one about so Doc in the front office flew out here to Los Angeles because he was here and they had a big dust up one night. Basically, he was saying he wasn't going to report, and Doc is quoted as saying, "It's in your fucking contract."
Wow.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, that's the only pull quote from the conversation that the journalist put in that section. I was like, oh, I want to hear the previous 10 sentences and the next 20. Wow. Like, what led to this moment and where, what exactly were we talking about?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it was in regards to, yes, we're not going to pay you for not showing up. You have to show up to get paid. It's in your fucking contract. That's where I don't, Ben, you can sit out if you want to, but you don't get paid for making a voluntary choice that violates the contract of your employment. So
exactly.
You do not get fucking paid.
Feel free to sit out, buddy.
Yeah, sit out. If you don't want to play anymore, retire. You have all the options in the world. I have zero problem with that, but you don't get to, you know, have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, no shit. No shit.
4 years left on your deal. I want out. Okay, well, we'll figure something out, but you need to show up to training camp.
Isn't it making half?
No, so long as he plays. I mean, he's already missed some bonuses.
Yeah.
Kyrie, if they allowed him to play, then he'd have to miss every home game. So there's half his money.
Wow.
And then technically when they play the Knicks, he couldn't play. So yeah. There's a little bit more money there. And then it's wherever he could play indoor. Just that you can't run a team like that.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. All right. Anyway, Magnificent Seven, Yul Brynner, Steve McQueen, Charles Bronson, James Coburn, Robert Vaughn, and Horst Buchholz, and a couple other people. Just a great film. And Eli Wallach, of course, is leading the Bandits, but just top to bottom, a stellar film. It's available for free on YouTube in 4K or 1080p. So for those of you who enjoy seeing Westerns, it's a very clean transfer and remastering. So if you have never seen it and you're listening to our voices, do yourself a fucking favor. Watch it for free on YouTube. Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid is also available uncut for free on YouTube. So
was that behind the paywall that you pay for a premium, or is that you're just saying you can search it, find it?
No, you can search and find it. Yeah. YouTube is putting more and more movies for free on YouTube.
It makes sense. They have to look at themselves as an entertainment platform as well.
Yep. Yep. I stumbled upon it, dude. I was just like randomly looking something up and it said Makes for Seven free. And I was like,
well, I've seen their free with ads. And every time I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not watching ads.
No days.
In the middle of a movie? No.
No ads. No thanks.
All right. So that was both of our deuces.
Yes. Oh, what's your one?
I probably don't have your one.
Oof, what's your one?
310 to Yuma.
Damn, really? Wow. Because okay.
I don't even... The remake is so vastly superior to
it. It is. It is.
To the original.
Yeah.
Look, whereas quite a few of these others...
But you're right. Yeah.
Some of these others I haven't seen, right? Like Birdcage, I have not seen the French... Le Cage de Faux. Whatever it is, I have not seen that. I haven't seen a couple others, but by and large, I've seen most of these others. And some of them are good improvements, some of them are leaps and bounds better. But to me, 310 to Yuma is like, I don't even care about the first one in the slightest. At least with Ocean's 11, there's the intrigue of Rat Pack and the story behind it. And I will watch it knowing. All right. The behind-the-scenes stuff, it's like they did concerts, and then concert ends, they went and filmed, and then filming ended at, you know, 3, 4 in the morning, and then they went out drinking, and they were drinking while filming and drinking at the show.
Yeah.
And just like this was a big, huge party. I find that interesting. So maybe the movie being bad is also because of this other, you know, self-inflicted wound. Whereas to me, 310 to Yuma's, I don't know, it's another in a string of Russell Crowe's at the time. It helped push Christian Bale into this dude keeps working. Ben Foster.
Yes. So good.
Yeah. And everything is, it's weird that the biggest push he's gotten was in X-Men.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
He did the Lance thing. He did for Hell or High Water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever he's in, he's usually good. Leave No Trace.
Leave No Trace. Oh, such a good movie, man.
It is good, but it's a smaller,
it is,
mostly does smaller. He's never really gotten the push, but he's, you know, it'd be tough for me to think of off the top of my head the last time I saw something him in it where I didn't at least like him.
I feel like he kind of picks and chooses on purpose, right? Because I mean, you would think people would have, like Giovanni Ribisi ending up in Avatar. You're like, what the fuck? So, I mean, seeing Foster in these bigger studio films, I'm sure would be possible if he wanted to do those big studio films. Do you know what I'm saying?
I believe it was Foster. I showed up to the store one night and he had gotten tossed down the front stairs by security. I believe it was Foster. If it wasn't, I apologize for the slander, man. But I believe it was Foster. There's a lot of those stories, though. Any club you go to often enough, you're going to see. Doesn't matter what. If you work at a nightclub, you've seen some crazy shit.
Can you say the worst celebrity encounter you've had at the store that wasn't a stand-up comic?
I've had some really weird ones that I probably shouldn't talk about on air.
All right. God damn it, Matt.
Well, it's just, I don't know where they were in their life.
We should create a $500 tier on the Patreon where we get to sit down and I get to ask you these questions and interview you.
And I'm willing to take on the potential libel lawsuit or whatever.
No, it's behind the paywall. It's only for the Patreon people.
500 and above?
And only at the $500 level.
Sure.
That'd be brilliant.
Sure. I've got some decent stories.
See?
I've got some decent stories.
We might have to create that on the Patreon. Five people, only five people can be at that level. And you get 1 hour every month where I get to ask Matt Nost about the celebrity encounters. There you go.
Anyway. So five of you need to pony up. $500, it sounds like.
Hey.
Make this app for John. Technically, then couldn't it be four people and then you're the other 500? And you're
no, I'm not paying the other five. What are you crying?
Well, this seems to be benefiting you quite a bit too, you know?
Well, you know, I'm the one that came up with it. I feel like I should get a little benefit.
Throw me a couple shekels on the side. Appreciate you doing this. All right. Well, good luck. Can't wait to meet those five people.
Yes. They'll set it up.
We'll make it happen.
Yeah, so then my number one. Oh, by the way, I hate to break your heart, but 310 to Yuma is based on a short novel by Elmore Leonard.
Is it? Oh, shit. By Elmore Leonard?
Yes.
Shut the fuck up.
I'm not.
Okay, well, I did not know. I didn't even look it up because that was one of the first ones I thought of.
Yeah.
Okay, if it is, I'll take it off my list.
No, don't take it off. Leave it. It's what you want at number one. I don't care. Yeah,
but it violates the stupid code that I put on.
I don't think it matters. It's number one. It should be your number one. Let it be number one.
I think I would have put on either Insomnia or Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Okay. I still think it should be your number one. Let it be your number one because you get no complaints from me.
Go ahead. What's your number one?
My number one is The Thing, the Kurt Russell film.
Yeah, it's based on like a novella, but they specifically... On this one, I looked it up.
Yeah.
Went back to the novella as the source material, not the first movie.
Mm.
So because I made the stupid stipulation, I kicked it off.
Yeah. You F. Murray Abraham this. You got all snooty about it being based on a book.
Upper crusty. I did. So you're seeing what I'm talking about. So now watch him in Scarface and be like, I buy you as an asshole. I don't buy you as I was born in a favela and then immigrated to the U.S. and now I'm helping run drugs. I don't buy that, man.
Well, that's
your
why he got
is too clean.
That's why he got hung because he was stupid. He was too upper crusty.
He may or may not have been an informant. We don't know. And then here we have Robert Loggia with his finger on the underworld pulse to tell us why you may have been wrong there. Buddy.
You want me to believe that Omar was a stool pigeon because
because he said so. What? Kid, please hand this duty, these duties off to someone else.
Anyway. Yeah, The Thing, the remake of the back in the 50s, the original one that came out, The Thing from Beyond or from Outer Space, whatever it is.
Yeah, I think it's something from Beyond.
Yeah, and it's a fantastic film, man. Kurt Russell, fucking Wilford Brimley, David Keith. Is that right? Keith David. I get those two mixed up all the time. Whole journey, because he's not initially the lead of the movie. That's what's so great about The Thing. It's not Kurt Russell's vehicle. Like it's an ensemble piece, and Kurt Russell through the movie rises to lead.
Yeah,
them slowly out but of surely. Situation. Yeah, exactly. The other people are more intelligent than he is. He's there to do a job, but he's not a scientist. He's like a grunt.
No, he's a handyman.
Yeah. And so he kind of, because of his street smarts and his natural suspicious nature, and he's got his feet a little more firmly planted on the ground, he ends up becoming the person who's in charge of this whole situation and leads to him and Keith David being the two last people left there looking at each other, which is a great fucking ending. And just fantastic direction by John Carpenter all through that movie and the music. Like just pulsating throughout really softly, just and the visuals. I mean, when that thing breaks off and becomes a head and crawls out with its fucking legs, or the dog when it's flipping out of the dog and all those guys, like, oh my god. So it's an insane movie, man.
Yeah, it had a small budget and it spent $1.5 million of its budget on just the effects. Reading the Wikipedia, so it wasn't well received in the slightest when it first came out.
No, it wasn't. Yeah, I know. I remember that. Yeah.
I don't remember that because I came to it years later and I was like, this is awesome. People saying it was too over the top. It was too grotesque.
Yeah.
They just didn't like it by and large and nobody saw it.
Yeah.
And over the years, it's just kind of grown into, you guys were wrong at the time. It happens.
Yeah.
You also get caught up in the moment, or we've seen a bunch of these movies right now. But then when you have the hindsight of a decade or longer to look back and be like, yes, but you may have had 10 of those types of movies in a 3-year span or 4-year span. Right. This was the best of them. You just might've been superheroed out at this point.
Exactly.
You need time. So maybe What If is the greatest thing in the world. I don't know. It might take me time to go back and see it.
Yes, it will. But anyway, yeah, just a great story overall. You all know it. So yeah, what more can we say? We've talked about it many times on the show. So we're at an hour and 43. Let's put this thing together. We still got another
show. Yeah. Well, because we went 35 up top. I mean, it's fully understandable.
There we go. All right. So I guess Magnificent Seven goes to number one, huh?
Guess so.
Yeah, because we got that at twos.
And then after that, we don't have much for a while. So if you want to do Thing next, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
And now Birdcage is my two. So I just moved everything up. I took 310 off.
Okay. If you really, I don't think you need to, but all right.
Birdcage is two. Where was that for you?
10.
So 210.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we got Thomas Crown, Cape Fear, Stars Born, but those are all basically at the very bottom altogether. Yeah. All right. So Birdcage next.
Yeah, sure. That's fine with me since it's up there too for you.
All right, do you want to honor the commonality now or go with our higher choices?
No, let's go with our higher choices. Then we'll get to the commonalities. We get a little bit lower on the list.
All right, I got my three.
Okay. So what is it right now?
We're at number four.
So Magnificent Seven is one.
The Thing, Birdcage.
Oh, Birdcage. All right. I have Scarface still left as my number three.
Okay. I've got The Mummy as my number three.
Oh, okay. Are we flipping?
Do you want to call it or would you like me to call it?
Yeah, I'll call it.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Heads. Give it to me.
Somebody did not wear their lucky underwear.
God damn it. Again?
Again.
You're dropping it on that.
2 weeks in a row. Then Scarface, not low enough as far as I'm concerned.
All right, keep it down, you.
You want to do our Thomas Crown, Cape Fear, Stars Born now? That's number six.
Yeah, let's do it.
So Thomas Crown was both our sevens?
Yes.
Hey, Cape Fear, I've got it eight.
Yeah, I got it at nine.
Stars Born
is eight for me.
And I've got that at nine. Ooh. All right. Well, if you want to go Stars Born over
okay.
Cape Fear.
Thank you.
No need to thank me. Just class does.
Oh, my God. Where are we at now?
We have nothing else in common. So I've got my number five or four, rather.
So do I. Is there only one spot left?
There's two spots left, 9 and 10.
Ooh, here we go.
Do I get my, does class reciprocate class?
Wait, you already won the flip. So naturally.
Oh, yeah, but I'm saying of the acquiescence, the automatic, the honorable thing here to do would just be
good. I let you have Birdcage way, way high up there. It was number 10 on my list. I feel like I acquiesced first.
My two. It's my two. Still, you did not.
We rarely put 210 high up on the list.
Look who's bringing a false argument into the overall conversation.
Your Honor.
All right.
Enough of the jibber jabber. Just flip.
You calling or am I calling?
You call it. It's your turn.
Right. Tails.
Come on, heads.
All right, what was your bullshit?
True Grit.
Oh, wow, you should have said something. I wouldn't have even fought you on the coin flip.
Yeah, True Grit, number four.
All right, I got and The Mummy for me. And
that's it.
Oh, I'm sorry, not The Mummy. The Departed.
Departed. Is that it?
That is it.
All right. Here we go. Our top 10 favorite remix. Yeah. At number 10.
The Departed.
At number 9.
True Grit.
At number 8.
Cape Fear.
At number 7.
A Star is Born.
At number 6.
The Thomas Crown Affair.
At number 5.
Scarface.
At number 4.
The Mummy.
At number 3.
The Birdcage.
At number 2.
The Thing.
And our number 1 favorite remake is...
is The Magnificent Seven. Well, there it is. There is today's show. Thank you for everybody that joined us in the live. We're doing our next live show actually next week instead of the 4th.
Yes.
So please jump in with us next week for our next live show. And you can follow us on Twitter at Top 10 Show or on Instagram and YouTube. It is /the top 10 podcast with the number 10. So please hit us up. We'd love to talk to you at any of those spots. And follow me at Matt Nost. Check out Settle the Score and Dropping Dimes soon to restart. Actually, by the time you hear this, it has restarted.
There you go.
So there you go.
All right. You can follow me at The Roka Says on Twitter and on Instagram. Head on over to Twitch as well. The Outlaw Nation. I'm there on Twitch under that banner. A lot of watch alongs and play alongs going to be happening there. And head on over to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/John Roka Says. And don't forget about the Cinephiles and the Geek Buddies out there as podcasts for y'all to listen to as well. All right. That's it from us. Y'all take care of yourselves. Be well. And let us know if any of your remakes did make our list that you love in the comments section below or tweeted us as well. All right. Be well, take care. We'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode of the Top 10 Show.